This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world. Occasionally.
Welcome, everybody, to another special episode of Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World. With me this week, filling in our off week, is an artist friend of mine, J.K. Woodward. How are you doing, J.K.?
Good, good.
I always feel weird calling you J.K. It feels weird saying that. Like, if it works with the whole name, it always feels weird just saying that. Yeah, so it's been quite a while since we've talked. I was on your podcast last, and it was... I believe it was when you wrapped up doing the City at the Ellison one.
Oh, yeah, that was a while. That was, what, at least 2 years ago?
Yeah, so it's been quite a while. I think that was the last time we talked. That's crazy. I feel like it's been one time since then, but I'm not sure. But anyways...
We talk on the internets.
Yeah, it's helpful. You're my old, before my time... rock music guy, I guess you'd say. Like,
you just call me old.
Well, you're older than me, but I got into hip hop in my formative years. So like all the, you know, like Bowie was the first one that I sent you a message and you just told me to call you, and then you told me about like every Bowie album and why I should listen to each one. But I've hit you up for other of those types of things. Like, what was the last one? I'm trying to remember now. The Pixies, that's what it was. I hadn't really listened to them, so I was like, I really like this. What do you suggest? It's always good to have somebody that's outside of your main genre.
And I have so many discographies like in my head, so much useless information I've collected over the years, and I can't remember what I'm supposed to be doing this weekend, but I can tell you what Bowie was working on in 73. I mean, and where he recorded it.
That's how I am with pro wrestling from like the mid 90s to the late 90s. I was a kid that, like, when everybody else was into comics and could remember every detail, I couldn't stand comics when I was a kid. And I was real into pro wrestling, and I could tell you a lot about the WWF for those years.
Oh, that was a while ago. You called it WWF.
Yeah, I had a hard time with that transition because they changed the name after I stopped watching wrestling. So when they did, I was like, this is stupid. I'm going to call it what
Same
I want.
Same here. Somebody just said WWE. And what the hell is that? I knew they were talking about wrestling just in context, but I'm like, I don't know what that is. Is that like a division of the WWF?
Yeah, I got back into it a few years ago because when we moved to Maine, my wife's cousin, huge wrestling fan. Like, he knows wrestling better than anybody knows anything, pretty much. Like, he's, you know, real in depth. So I just kind of, like, I had liked it. We started chatting wrestling. My wife got a kick out of the fact that I could hold my own with her cousin in a conversation. And that kind of got me back in. And now with the WWE Network being so, easy to access, it makes it easy. Like, I don't watch it very much, but, like, I'll usually watch, like, the monthly events and a few other things here and there if I'm in the mood. So it's kind of nice because it makes it easy to kind of dabble in it, which, it's also a plus of Marvel Unlimited. And we were talking before we started recording a little bit about Uncanny X-Men. And so I had started... We talked a little bit about this before, but I'll kind of start from the beginning again. I'd started with Uncanny X-Men. I need to talk a little slower. It's getting late here. With Giant Size. And I always had a hard time going back and reading older comics because I didn't start reading comics until, like, 2010 almost. I read a little bit before that, but not much. Like, I never really got into comics. So, like, stuff in the 80s and 90s, like, was real hard for me to adjust to the style. So going back to the beginning of that run with Giant Size in the 94, that's like the late 70s, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
it was 77 or 78.
I always wanted to because I always loved the X-Men, you know, from growing up, like, with a cartoon on TV in the 90s. And they my comic shop that I go to out here had some of the old, like, cheap essential collections, black and white, for just $4 a trade because they were something somebody had traded in. So I grabbed all those that he had and started reading it that way. And then after a while, I was like, I want color, damn it. So I forked out for some Marvel Unlimited, and I've been pounding through it that way. And I'm on issue 189, so I've gone through 100 and well, probably about 100 issues with reading some annuals and stuff like that. And got a long way to go. But
well, I mean, before we talk too much about specifically those stories, I'm curious because you said your introduction to X-Men was the animated series, which is very 90s. It was very based on the Jim Lee reboot in the mid-90s, or early 90s, I guess it was. How did this is for me the real X-Men, the original stuff, how did that look to you from the standpoint of you're used to sort of the belts and pockets kind of, and you went to the had to go back to the spandex. What was that like for you? Did it seem silly or corny? Did it just seem strange?
It didn't seem strange at all, and this is why. So I was exposed to the cartoon in the 90s, so I was familiar with the X-Men, which is why you know, it seems like everybody either is more comfortable with DC or Marvel. I think it's like you get used to certain pockets of characters, and it's just it's easier to spread out from there, right? So Marvel's the side that's easier for me because growing up, X-Men was out there. Spider-Man was, you know, really out there. There was obviously in the 90s, there was a lot of Marvel stuff shoved into everything. And then when you get to like superhero movies starting to come out a little heavier, I mean, the like Batman 89 was like one of the first movies I remember ever watching. So I've always had a real like fondness for Batman. But like the X-Men movies and the Spider-Man movies were the first ones as I started getting older that came out that were, you know, at least watchable. Like, you know, there's some awful movies here and there in the mix. And of course some indie stuff that at that time, like I wouldn't have even really looked at that way, you know, like Hellboy or Spawn kind of coming out throughout that time. But so I started, you know, I mean, I was exposed to the cartoon, then the movies came out. At this point, I still hadn't really watched or read X-Men comics. It wasn't until I moved to Maine, which was like 7 years ago now, 7 or 8 years ago, that I started reading X-Men. And this was, I think I started a little bit into the series, but this was like right after Schism when Wolverine and the X-Men started and he had the school, and then Uncanny X-Men with Cyclops and his team. And it was leading up to the whole Avengers versus X-Men thing, which was also the event that taught me that Marvel events will just leave you sad and disappointed. So I was kind of all over the place. So going back to costumes actually felt pretty good after like the movies. Like they really tried to get away from the costume thing. Like, you know, they try to seem they try to fit in with like regular culture too much.
Yeah, the late 80s and early aughts, everybody felt that superheroes should be kind of like leather daddies or something. they should, you know, they kind of look like a motorcycle gang, or I'm not sure what they were going for. I mean, later they redefined the suits as flight suits because they have a jet. But I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what that was. I think, I don't know if it, what was that movie? There was a space vampire movie, very famous, very bad. I think it was Planet. I think it might have been Planet X or something like that, but it was. I might be confusing that with the Star Trek crossover, to be honest. But there was an old 50s movie that has uniforms that look, the space uniforms look almost exactly like that, and I think that's where Singer got the idea, or whoever designed them. But I'm not sure what that was, or maybe they were also, you know, it wasn't X-Men wasn't the first big budget comic book movie that was a blockbuster. The first technically was in the 90s anyways was Blade, and Blade did really well, and it was the first time that a Marvel movie had done well that wasn't some low budget kind of joke. So I'm wondering if like they decided the X-Men should kind of look like Blade and all be in black leather. Sure what that was.
Everything had that kind of toned down, like a little too serious for itself style in kind of the earlier superhero movies.
I think they were trying to stylize everything to be like the Matrix. I think that was kind of the look of the period.
Yeah, I mean that pretty much nails it. I think that the Iron Man movies, of course, like when you know the Marvel universe as we know it now started, that's when they kind of broke it back into the mold of like really making it feel like a comic book and not trying to make it, okay, let's make comic books approachable for regular moviegoers. That was when they're like, no, we're going to bring them into our world. And yeah, you know, at least as much as
all of a sudden,
can,
movies were figuring out that there were some great ideas and these comic books were really entertaining, and they just figured out that's a good way to get a blockbuster is not to mess with it too much.
But yeah, so anyways, going back to Giant Size, my favorite X-Men were Wolverine, because I didn't read comics during the era where he was oversaturated. So a lot of people that kind of read comics through that area and are burnt out on Wolverine, I've never felt that because I didn't read it. So I don't have to. Nightcrawler and those two to start with. But so reading 90, the Giant Size, Nightcrawler's introduced, Storm is introduced, Colossus is introduced. And then I'm going to blank out his name, but the guy they killed off shortly after.
The Native American character, right?
Mm-hmm. Thunder? Yeah. Thunder something. I know it's Thunder's right. We're going to kick ourselves later when everybody's tweeting, no, that's his name. But yeah, so they were all introduced. Like, right off, you open it up, and Nightcrawler, I knew that was his introduction. So that just kind of sent chills down my spine. Like, this was great. Like, reading Nightcrawler's introduction, then you're getting all that stuff all at once. Storm, through reading that early stuff, like especially, you know, once it was Claremont's after that, and as he kept on going, he developed her so much that she had more character back then than she has now. Right. Like I fell in love with her character back then because she had so much more personality and so much more
and
to
this
her.
This issue was also her introduction.
Yeah.
In fact, most of these were new characters, except for, I believe, Wolverine, who appeared in Hulk 181 and 182, I think it was, was his first appearance. But I think Nightcrawler, Storm, and they all had their little two-page kind of vignette origin stories, how they met Professor X. And that's all the first half of this was.
I just absolutely loved it. It's fantastic, getting introduced or like reintroduced with Wolverine to those characters. On top of that, Claremont's run and seeing the development of Wolverine, it's like now he's been, you kind of say he's been overdeveloped because they've done all these crazy things and mashed it all together, you know, having different origins. And I mean, they make a joke out of it now. It's like, what's his real name? He has like three different real names now. But reading through Claremont's developments, like he starts off just kind of being that, berserker thug kind of character, and the other X-Men.
Yeah, he was a jerk.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a jerk. He was the kind of guy that the way Claremont described him is he's the guy who is in the room that makes you really uncomfortable. You don't know when he's going to just freak out for no reason. And he wasn't supposed to be likable, and that's what made the character interesting.
Yeah.
But he became popular, and then different writers he became a little more complex, and they filled in the gaps, and I feel like it kind of ruined him, because I liked it when he was, who knows who this guy is, and who knows what he's going to do.
Yeah, I think the perfect moment for him was as Claremont developed him a little bit, it was just always, he did anything, and he was just getting, like, a tongue lashing from somebody, whether it be Storm or Cyclops or whoever, and it gets to the point where they realize, and I think it was Storm in this case, but she realized some of the decisions that he had to make and some of the things that he had to do. I don't remember the specific story, but he was basically like, yeah, you don't know who I am, so why don't you quit judging me? And dropped the mic and walked away. that was just a great moment, because you just keep on reading. It's like, he's right about a lot of this stuff, It's like, they won't kill and stuff like this, so there's that conflict, but a lot of the times he's right, but then they'll just be like, you stupid fool. Like, you don't say that. Go sit in the corner and shut up now. So I loved it when he finally got that moment to just be like, no, you know what? You don't know everything.
Yeah. I enjoyed the character. I kept going back and forth originally on the character. Now, when I was introduced to this character, I think I was, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 or something when this came out. But when we get to the Paul Smith era, when that's 82 or 83, I was right on the edge of adolescence there. And I started liking the character a lot more, and I started getting sick of my teachers and authority figures, and I started seeing Scott Summers in that light and wished Wolverine would just cut his head off sometimes. So my attitude, I think that character was great, when you were in that age where you're just sick of people telling you what to do. You start to like Wolverine telling people off and saying things like, I don't jump through hoops for nobody. And his rebellion becomes more appealing in the same way that probably heavy metal music back then became appealing for the same reason.
Yeah. You know, Cyclops is an interesting character for a character that seems so boring. When you kind of look at what he's represented, somebody made the comment on Twitter. Somebody was bashing, like, why would Emma Frost be with Scott Summers? And I'm totally blanking on who it was, but it was a female writer, I believe it was, said, like, she, like, kind of Emma Frost's background, like, she's never had somebody like Scott Summers. So when you get somebody who's, like, upright and good like he is, like, a good person, when you've had all this, like, shady stuff in your past, like, you kind of go for somebody that doesn't seem your type. That kind of put Scott Summers in perspective to me, for me a little bit, just looking at him a little bit differently, and all the stuff he's been through, and, like, how the burden of always trying to do the right thing. I think it kind of disappointed me when they, you know, turn him to the bad side. That's kind of when I started falling off of reading the X-Men stuff, because it's like he always represented that, like, you do the right thing. You just stick to it. It's kind of like
he was unshakable.
That's
the thing about his character that made him appealing, is it, despite everything, he was unshakable. I mean, in the early years, getting back to 94 and the start, I always felt bad for him, because the new X-Men, just, it was filled with conflict, which made the story great. But, you know, they didn't really get along with each other, and he had to make that work. So I always felt bad for him, because they were almost like bickering children that he had to try to, get to work together, which seemed like an insurmountable task.
Yeah.
And the professor always seemed to be going, hey, yeah, it's your problem. Make it work.
Yeah. Now he has legs, where I'm reading right now. Now he can walk, so he's like, oh, I'll take over again. Storm lost her powers. It's all confusing right now. Storm has no powers. Professor Xavier can walk. Cyclops is still only halfway in the picture. Yeah. that's where I'm at it on 189, the issue that I'm on. I'm really excited about getting to 201, because that's a cover that I love, and I know that's the issue where Storm and Cyclops fight it out for control of the X-Men. So it's I started collecting Uncanny last summer, right? And I kind of went a little overboard and then backed off of it some. So I had collected up some stuff, and I decided to kind of just sell a bunch of it and back away. I'm slowly starting to collect again, but it was kind of interesting collecting and getting these issues where I really loved the covers, or knowing an issue is a little bit more significant because it's something that happened, like, as I bought them, but I was still so far away from reading them. And now as I, like, keep progressing forward, and I hit an issue where I had it and I loved the cover, and then I actually get to it and get to read it, it's been really cool to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting as I've read through, too, seeing some issues that the cover just didn't even notice it before. It was ones I didn't own. I've looked back and forth through them, but just didn't even catch my attention. Then I read the story, and then I love that issue, and I want it so much. Like the one where they introduced Lockheed. That was one of my favorite issues in what I've read far.
Was that during the Brood storyline?
Yeah, it was right at the end of the Brood storyline.
Right. Okay. Yeah. He just kind of stowed away or something, right? They didn't really bother telling where this space dragon came from.
Yeah. Lockheed saved Kitty right at the end of that. And then just kind of stuck around after that point. That was cool too, because, like, I had known Lockheed existed, but never knew anything about where he came from. So it's really random when you're reading, you know, decades later, and there's this little purple dragon hanging around out of the blue. But that one was great. Another one that I really loved that I read not too long ago is the one where it's right after Secret Wars, and I started reading Secret Wars, but I haven't read all of it yet. But Colossus falls in love with.
Oh, the alien girl, the white-haired girl. Yeah.
So he comes back and breaks Kitty's heart. So Wolverine takes him to a bar, planning to get him drunk and then kick his ass. But they run into Juggernaut, and Juggernaut gets in a fight with Colossus. Absolutely love that issue. Thought that one was great, too.
Yeah, that was. I remember reading that for the first time, thinking Colossus was being quite the jerk. But Colossus used to be one of my favorite characters, only because visually he was interesting. When Kitty came aboard, she was about my age when they created this character. I think when she came in, she was only 13. I was about that age. So I kind of locked onto that character. So I kind of got pissed off at Peter with his, I found a new girl anyways. Bye.
It's been interesting reading Kitty.
Did it seem inconsistent for that character though? Like, cause he always was the sensitive guy, heart of a poet and everything. And all of a sudden he's just like, I don't know. He seemed a little disconnected.
Yeah, I think that part of it, it felt a little forced. He was always so. I mean, it's almost like, you know, that whatever. I haven't read Secret Wars, like I said, but you know, whatever happened, it seemed like he came back different. But you know that, like, down the road, he settles back into to who he's been. So it just seems like they did that to force an issue with creating some conflict there. Which I love everything that I've read, but that is one thing that definitely happens a little bit from time to time, is it gets a little extra soap opery.
Yeah, exactly. Everything changes so fast and then changes back, because it was a different kind of storytelling in this era. You wouldn't get drastic changes that remain permanent, mm-hmm. because then people would drop off the book, you know, not so much as you do now. Now changes happen and it just reboots.
Yeah.
But back in this time, they would definitely, like, kind of the storytelling felt a little more rushed compared to now. Like, if you go back and read something, I mean, it didn't at the time because it was aimed at a different demographic. But you go back to it and you know, people that are used to reading what we have today will look at that and go, it seems rushed.
Yeah. And, you know, the huge difference is with how much the difference in the usage of words. Like, you read a lot more when you read comics back then. It took a lot longer to read them. I just recently, with The Return of Wolverine coming out last week, I think it was, I wanted to kind of catch up on the story, and with having Marvel Unlimited, it's easy to do so. So I Googled, you know, kind of figure out where the story started, and it started with the 2013 Wolverine series. I read the 2013 run and the 2014 run, so that was like 28 issues. And Death of Wolverine, which is another 4 issues, in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes me 3 days to read a few issues of Uncanny, unless, like, I just really have a lot of free time. Like, the old Uncanny, you know, that we're talking about. So, yeah, it blew me away when I read, Days of Future Past, and it's 2 issues?
Yeah, well, the thing is, they also had narrative boxes, which they got rid of. Mm-hmm. They also had thought balloons, which they got rid of. And they also had a lot more exposition because they were trying to explain to you what you were reading in case it was your first time reading X-Men ever. So things like Wolverine would always explain that he has adamantium skeleton and he doesn't much like his claws. You know, Scott Summers would always explain to nobody in particular that if he even opens his eyes just a fraction of an inch, he could punch a hole through a mountain and that kind of stuff. And Claremont would write these same lines. But it was great because I jumped on X-Men. I think it was like, what was the circus one with Arcade?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It was a cover with Nightcrawler, and it was a circus motif going on.
Where all the X-Men were brainwashed, and yeah.
And I jumped in on that because I like that cover. And I'm like, what's this? And what's that cool demon-looking character? And but the thing is, I understood what was going on enough where, you know, I eventually went back to 94 and then read up. And it was only like a year from this point. But, I mean, it was great that you could jump on anytime and know what was going on. You don't necessarily get that now. A lot of writers say things like they try to assume this is somebody's first book. But I don't think you can as much because it with TV, storytelling is very different now, less episodic.
Yeah, it really is. It's drastically different. One of the big differences too is the clarity in art now compared to then. Like, I mean, you look back at that art and that art's great, but it's different. The quality of the paper and every, like, it just makes it to where there's only a certain level of clarity. So if you didn't have all the exposition, you can look at a panel and not really know what's going on. Whereas now you can depict so much so easily with art, with expression. That definitely makes a big difference.
Much less was expected then. And it was mostly because of the printing. Like you were saying, it was all done on the cheapest paper. It was all done on pulp. And it was all done pretty much single color. You know, you didn't get gradients or shading. And too much detail, you end up becoming a smudge, mm-hmm. you know, so So, you know, now you can have an important part of the exposition be on a piece of paper that Steve Rogers is holding or something, you know, and you can get down to that kind of detail, especially with digital comics where you can zoom in. Back then, you had to explain the piece of paper they were holding because there would be nothing on it, because it would just be a smear if you did too much detail. So it was definitely a different kind of storytelling. But one that I've recently revisited for a project I can't talk too much about, but it is so much fun to do. It's so liberating. Something about not having to draw every shoelace or every or detail of the soles of the feet. You can just have like flat boots and things like that. It was a lot of fun and a lot quicker. And that's why back then too, they could do more than a page a day. They could bang these things out and still have some quality to them.
Yeah, I've always felt like, you know, with any kind of advance in technology and medium that you use, the longer you go using that, the more, you know, artists and creators figure out how to get the most out of the tools that they have.
Maximize it.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, you know, reading that era of comics, you know, getting a little bit further on before the digital influence starts to come in at all, it's like everybody was getting to the best of their abilities. So it's like it's the perfect time for me to jump into this stuff and see like how good it is. You know, you go back decades before that and there's a big difference. But I feel like when you get around like, you know, into the 90s, you know, up to like early 2000s, everybody gets these digital tools and they haven't pushed them to their limits yet. So
they also used every little trick in the toolbox. I remember looking through some old 90s stuff going like everybody looked like they were made of plastic. Because everybody figured out how to use the gradient in Photoshop or the airbrush tool, and they just decided everything needed to be shiny, you know. Because before that, like I said, everything was black color, so they went a little nuts. And you can actually sometimes in some of the comics actually see some very obvious Photoshop filters that aren't anything even special. They just come standard with Photoshop, and it just becomes obvious because I don't think anybody was experienced as a Photoshop colorist because it was a new thing. But it's funny to go back and look at that stuff. But what I wanted to say also about the change in the way art and storytelling is done now too, part of it is technology. But I would say even at least as much responsible for it is there was a shift in the demographic. So the stuff you're reading, 94, this was made for kids my age, you know, and possibly teens. You know, but there weren't many 40-year-old readers, and they weren't making billions at the box office for it. You know, so it was much more just something, and also there was no direct market, or it was the beginning of the direct market. So you bought this in a grocery store. You saw these comics everywhere, and they were just cheap little things that you'd roll up and put in your back pocket and trade with other kids. It was a much different a market at that time. And I think that had a lot to do with the shift. I think they got a lot more sophisticated because we never stopped reading comics. So the demographic got older and we demanded much more sophisticated comics. I remember the first time God Loves, Man Kills came out, and it was called a graphic novel. We had no idea what that was. But it was a better format. It had better paper and it had those gradients and it had the art was fantastic and it was much darker and much more adult. And that was a rare thing at the time. And there were also things like heavy metal and epic and stuff at that time, but they were the anomalies. And that's kind of what comics are now. They're just like, what if we, at the time it was, what if we made this for adults? What would it look like? But now they are made for adults. And because we demand that sophistication, artists had to step up. Writers had to step up.
It's been a lot of fun. My son's he just turned 6 this summer, and he's just getting old enough now to like really start to get like a first level of interest in comics. I've got him comics here and there over the years, or like free comic book day kids onesies. Like he'll look at them a little bit, but then kind of move on quickly. But he's gotten a little bit more interested, and we were out shopping at the mall, and they had a $1. Like reprint of a Teen Titans Go comic, and you know he's watched that cartoon, so like that caught his attention. So I got it from him. It was only a buck, and he really liked it. So I ended up subscribing to it for him, And so he's gotten his third issue just recently. So he's got a couple of them.
Oh, cool.
So like he's really like really, really into that. Like he would ask me to read the stories over and over again to him every night for quite a while. And then the other day we went to this this big like yard sale they had in the park type of deal around here. And there was a guy there with just a bunch of comic boxes, like, you know, old beat up stuff and nothing amazing, but fun to look through. So we're looking through and he just picked out like four random comics. He got Captain America. He got a Plastic Man. He got a Guardians of the Galaxy. And I don't remember the other one. And we came home and he just looked at those and looked at those and looked at those. And these were ones from probably like the like 80s and 90s, maybe. Probably 80s for these. Because oh, cool. I think, yeah. So like they were older ones, but just seeing him like be so engrossed looking through those because he's just so like intrigued by the characters now. And we haven't read those ones. I don't think the, you know, the stories would enthrall him the same way as, you know, Beast Boy punching paparazzi in the Teen Titans Go comic. But it just is so great to see like how enthusiastic he gets about the different characters and stuff.
That's what makes me happy that there is all ages comics out there again. You know, it's a separate market from what we consider mainstream because mainstream doesn't seem as all ages as it used to be. But I am happy, like, things like what IDW is doing with the Turtles, they kept it kind of all ages. Like, meaning, you can enjoy it as an adult. It's not quite, Teen Titans Go. Mm-hmm. It's something that can appeal to you and to, children as well, which is kind of what the tradition used to be. I think more of that out there is important because, you know, us older comic fans, we're eventually gonna die. you gotta kind of shake this demographic and start writing for younger. And I feel like we're on the right track with that because there's a division. Whenever there's a division in fandom, that means, you know, it's usually old people saying they want it to be the old way. And that's good because that means they're targeting new people. The same thing happened with Star Trek. The same thing's happening with Star Wars, for better or worse. So I'm kind of hopeful for the future of comics because of that. You need kids reading comics. Bottom line.
Exactly. Yeah. You need a wide variety of stuff to appeal to people. You know, I mean, like I said, when I was a kid, most people is their prime time for getting into comics. And then by the time they're my age, they're holding on to all those memories. I hated comics when I was a kid. My cousin loved them and he had a comic collection. I'd look at them and be like, why would I want to read this? You know, it was the 90s. So he was reading very mainstream stuff also, so I had like all that mainstream art in my face. But I would look at them and be like, these are so hard to follow. That, you know, the layout wasn't, you know, yeah, real approachable for me, but
it was a dark time for comics. Yeah. I stopped reading in the 90s, probably around 92 or 93. Or not reading. I stopped reading superhero comics and started looking for other things. And it was actually a good thing for me because you know, it things I had previously just dismissed offhand, I was forced to check out, and one of those things was Cerebus, and it turned out to be great. I saw, you know, by the time I got around to reading it, it wasn't the floppies anymore. I was just buying the phone books, and I saw mm-hmm. Church and State, and it had these cool caricatures of these characters called Mick and Keith, which are obviously Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, and that's what made me buy the book. But it turned out to be so much more, and I don't think like things like that I would have discovered if superhero comics weren't so bad at the time.
Yeah, and I kind of ended up getting into comics a little bit backwards because that was the stuff. I mean, Cerebus, I finally read a year or so ago. But when I first started reading, it was... Well, the first little dabble I did was because I got really into Kevin Smith for a little bit, like right at the end of high school, beginning of college. So Green Arrow, actually, yeah, with Phil Hester, and his covers were fantastic.
Oh, yeah, they were beautiful.
Yeah, that Green Arrow run, and then he had a Daredevil run. So those were the two things I got, and then it didn't take me that long, and I got kind of burnt out on Kevin Smith, and I ended up selling those.
Well, because
I didn't
wait so long. He was notoriously late with his scripts, I heard.
Like it was more the movie, because I got really into the movies, and then I apparently matured enough in a year to be like, I'm tired of these Kevin Smith movies. So I moved on. I didn't read comics again for years. My wife actually got me to read comics again, because we were heavy, heavy into reading literature. I mean, there was a year that she read over 100 novels, and I read, I think, about 70. We were keeping track of what we were reading, and there were different lists that we were using, and one was Time Magazine's top 100 novels of the 20th century, and The Watchmen was on there. So she's like, we should get this to read it. And I was reluctant to, and finally I did, and I was like, this is really good. So I was like, I want to read more comics, but I don't want to read superheroes. So I didn't really know what to get, but a friend of mine years ago had been reading Sandman. So I got Sandman, and I got into Sandman. Absolutely love Sandman. And I think that's really where I kind of, you know, dug deeper into comics. I stopped reading again after that point for a while. But then once we moved to Maine, I needed an easier hobby, and that's when I started reading Batman again, read X-Men some. But what really hooked me in is when I started reading Ninja Turtles and Valiant. And you know that I got really into Valiant for a number of years.
Well, that was going to be my question. Like, what got you into Valiant? Because, you had the podcast. You're pretty passionate about it.
Yeah. I mean, we had the podcast for about 3 years. And it's still crazy. I mean, I'm doing this podcast right now because of Valiant. I met you at a convention, but I might not know you as well if it wasn't for Valiant, because I got to know Daryl because he was doing a Valiant podcast. You're friends with Daryl, so that's like I met you separately, but then like just having kind of the group to get to know everybody a little bit better makes a difference, you know?
That's how it works. I usually meet people, and then Daryl follows through while I'm too busy working.
Well, then I also got to know Amy. Like, I still chat with Amy all the time. And you
the
know,
whole gang, so, right? The whole Taylor Network gang, yeah.
But anyway, so, I had been getting comics from a store called Newbury Comics out here.
Oh, I remember Newbury.
Yeah. And they've progressed into
one in Boston and
And they've like, they've progressed into like the one here now, it's in the mall, and it's like a giant Hot Topic with more of a geek culture rather than like a gothy feel to it, you know? So they still have a lot of comics, but that's clearly not their number one priority. But they still have a lot of comics.
When I was a kid in the 80s, the one in Boston was a record store / comic book store.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a one-stop shop for me because I was into both things at the time.
But. Yeah, it's pretty cool now because they still have like they have a ton of comics. They have a ton of records. It's still probably one of the best places other than it's probably one of the best places to get records at easily around here nowadays. But they have a ton of clothes, pop vinyls, like all that kind of stuff. So they're huge. They have like every geeky thing you could want pretty much. So I started out there, and then my wife was working in downtown Portland, and she was always like following what was going on with local businesses, and she saw that a local comic shop, Coast City Comics, you know, that I met you at their convention, they were having a buy one, get one free sale on back issues. So she's the one that told me to go in to Coast City Comics and check it out. So we go there, and we hadn't lived in Maine super long, and I was still like really stressed out driving downtown, so she even like drove, because I hated driving down there until I got used to it. So I went in there. Yeah.
That's like the quietest city in the world.
Yeah, but down I grew up in the desert. I don't like having issues parking. That's what bothers me. I mean, I drove down around LA plenty, but like I always knew where I was going. You know, I lived in California. You know, we go down to Hollywood to go to Amoebas and stuff like that. But I never had parking issues.
You know,
that's
gone
now. Park in
a
garage. I heard about that. So weird.
Yeah. Sad.
It's so weird that some of that stuff's gone. Anyway, so she took me there, and I went in, and I talked to Tristan and Jarrett. And I said, I've been reading Batman, I've been reading X-Men, I want to read something different, I have no idea what. So they start suggesting stuff, some of the stuff I wasn't really interested in, but they said, everything Valiant's doing now is good. That was when Valiant only had 4 issues out, it was still pretty close to the launch. And then they also said, oh, and this new Ninja Turtle comic. And I was like, well, I loved Ninja Turtles growing up. That was my favorite thing ever. So I got some issues of the new Ninja Turtles, and I got a couple issues of Archer and Armstrong and a couple issues of Bloodshot. And I went home and I read the Archer and Armstrong I got and the Bloodshot I got, and I loved it. I went back the next day while they were still having the sale and bought every issue I could of those 3 things.
Wow.
And that was where I went from. If it wasn't for that, I honestly think I would have phased back out of comics after a while because I would have got bored of the superhero stuff. I still like, I can read superhero stuff for a while, but eventually I start to get bored of it and I put it aside for a while. Like I'll do that with Uncanny too. Like I'll binge on it for a little bit and be like, okay, I'm going to take a break and read other stuff for a while.
Yeah.
So Valiant and Ninja Turtles hooked me in. Valiant definitely big time because they were super good for a few years. And then the, like, what kind of phased this out is, like, the stuff was starting to feel a little more segmented. The quality was, like, they were still good. There was a lot of promising stuff in the future. But they were trying to diversify a little bit more. But then once DMG bought them out, that was kind of where we went. Like, we were already kind of losing the fervor and getting more interested in other stuff. And that was just kind of like, okay, changes started happening. It's about time for us to wrap up the podcast. So I've kind of stopped reading Valiant right now, but that's, you know, it's not going to be a forever stop reading them. But I'll wait till there's like a Comixology sale and I'll pick up a run of something that I, you know, that was around the time I stopped.
Do that. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I did. That's how I read Valiant, because I wasn't, I was probably the one Valiant reader that wasn't the super fan, because everybody I talk to that reads Valiant ends up being a super fan. I could not believe the enthusiasm when I got tapped to do a special cover for C2E2.
Yeah, the Bloodshot cover. Bloodshot
cover, yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm used to enthusiasm from Star Trek fans, which is what I usually work on, but it was nothing like this. And I went to do a signing, and people that you know, had never even heard of me were lining up to get their cover signed. And I had the original with me, and it sold. The first person bought it. The first person bought it, and the second person in line was like, "Oh, they were gonna buy it." You know, I was like, "Holy fuck, I can't believe this." You know, I can't believe the enthusiasm. And then since then, I always wanted to work more with Valiant, but I got kind of sucked up into other things. But yeah, they that their fan base, small as it is very enthusiastic.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting now too, because I've taken a step out of that community, but I've gotten a ton of friends because of that community. And there's still so much fervor for it. It's just like kind of a new group. Like the people, a lot of the people that were as obsessed as I was when I was, some of them are still around. But a lot of them have kind of calmed down or narrowed down their focus a little bit. But there's just been like new people stepping up. It's just there's so much great content there, and it's not so deep that you can't really go back and access it. That right. You know, it's easy for people to get hooked into it. Yeah, it's since then I've like I can't afford many comics nowadays. You know, we've bought a house, we have a lot more real life expenses. So I've taken a big step back, and I'm slowly kind of dipping my toes into newer stuff. For a while, I was only like catching up on, I have so much Comixology stuff that I've never read, so I got plenty to go there. There's a digital service called Hoopla that you can sign up for through your library, so you can read some stuff for free. That's like a great way to try stuff out. But I'm slowly dipping into new stuff, but I'm always looking for more for some of the different stuff rather than just the things that can get you hooked in too deep. So I am going to try out the new Uncanny X-Men that's coming out soon. I won't let myself get hooked into all the X-Men, you know? A couple of the newer things that I've been checking out that I've really liked is Sword Daughter by Brian Wood. I don't remember the name of the artist offhand. Border Town. Yeah, I know. It's not a name I was familiar with. I can actually walk over and grab it while we're talking. Border Town is another one. The first issue just came out with from Vertigo. And I absolutely was blown away by that book. And the artist is the one that got me hooked into it, because he was on another podcast and I listened to him, Ramon Villalobos. Mm-hmm. And he was hilarious. So I was like, I'm going to give his book a shot. And then it just ended up being fantastic.
What is that? Cheater. I think I heard of Border Town. What is that?
Let me find it so I can tell you all the names. I'm awful with remembering names. It is about a border town in, I want to say it's Arizona.
Okay.
And it's a mixture of like a lot of real life politics. Like this kid just moves to town, butts heads with a Nazi. They're like high school kids, and he's like half Mexican, so the Nazi doesn't realize he's half Mexican. So he becomes friends with him. Then when he does, then the Nazi has to go and fight him to save face. And but then Chupacabra shows up, and crazy mythical stuff starts happening too. So it's this great mixture of like the, you know, the mythical, The writer, who he's the one whose name I was trying to look up because I knew I was going to forget it. Eric Esquivel. He's the writer. So he and Ramon obviously are both Hispanic. So the Hispanic influence is huge. The coloring is great too. Tamara Bonvillain is the colorist on it. Just the mixture of heavy kind of social things that are going on nowadays. That's a huge, huge component of it. But then with the mythical stuff thrown in, Ramon's art style is great. It's really different and it really appeals to me. So just based on hearing him talk, seeing his art style, like if you Google his name, the fourth image that shows up is a really Latin-influenced Raphael that he did. So I was like, sold. it's really good. Like, there aren't many new books that I'm reading, and that's one that I'm hooked on and, like, will push anybody I can to check it out. That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for, stuff that's a little bit different. Even Sword Daughter, I checked that one out on a Comixology sale, and I liked it so much that I decided I had to buy the first couple issues on eBay.
So do that too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I often do that. I'll buy something on Comixology and check it out, and then I feel compelled to get the paper copy.
Yeah, for me, and I haven't done that often. Like, this is actually the first time recently that I've done that. But it's like, if it feels like it's going to be something special where I'm like, exactly. I don't just want to have this digitally, but like, I think that this is going to be something that I'm going to appreciate having the collection of these comics to go back and reread. And those two comics, I think, are the case with it. Some other ones, like I was getting Venom for a little bit. It was just fun, mm-hmm. But like, I'll read those and I mailed them off to somebody else to read. But those two books are ones that like these are going to be special. So I'm going to get those and stick with them and, it'll be worth it. But yeah, well, I think I've kept you longer than you intended to. So I think we'll wrap this up so you can get back to making comic books.
Okay. And when's this air?
I think this will go up next week on Tuesday. We just put our last banked episode out this week. So yeah, this one will be up next week and we'll tag you in it when we post it and tweet it out. Okay. And all that.
I ask because I was wondering if I should announce something, but it's going to be announced at New York Comic Con. So
how far off is that?
I can't say anything. That's sometime next month in October.
Well, if you want to, we can bank this and just hold it back. There's nothing else that's timely in this.
I'll just tease it and say that there's for Star Trek fans, there's something, another really big story coming up in the future, and I just did the cover for it, and the Tiptons will be writing it. And you'll hear more about that at New York Comic Con, whether this airs before or after. Also that I am going to be in Birmingham, for those of you on the other side of the pond. At Star Trek Destination, I'll be a guest there, and I'll have three exclusive prints that have never been seen before that is going to be printed through the company Destination. Some prints from IDW that'll be taken with me. For those that have probably seen this, there's a triptych of every single Star Trek character from all the franchises, and it was originally three separate covers from three con exclusives that you had to collect and put together. But we made a print of it, so you can finally get the whole thing put together, and I'll have that with me there too. Okay, that's all the announcements.
Awesome. So I was never a Star Trek fan, and your work got me to at least try Star Trek. Like, I've read some of the stuff that you've done, but I've also watched it. My wife watched every damn Star Trek thing available on Netflix. I kind of phased in and out, but I've at least been exposed to all of it now, all because of you. But yeah, so anybody who hasn't checked out JK's work, definitely check it out. Anybody who has checked it out will swear by it, and I certainly do. I know they can find you on Twitter at JK_Woodward. Where else may they look for you?
Same thing on Instagram, JK_Woodward. And I think I'm maxed out on Facebook, but I have a page, The Art of JK Woodward, which you can find that on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Who's Paul, of course. The podcast is at OccasionallySTW. Go to NerdyLegion.com to check out all of our other great and wonderful podcasts. Go to Taylor Network to check out JK's podcast. Would you like to mention what that is?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Go Trek Yourself. We usually release weekly on Friday. And it's basically a Star Trek podcast about Discovery. But I know we have some fans that have never watched Star Trek that still enjoy the podcast. So if you're not a Star Trek fan, don't let that stop you from checking it out. I think you'll have some laughs.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining me. You are always welcome back. We'll have to get back to some more Uncanny once I get a little bit further in. Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and have a good night.
All right, thanks for having me on. Like that. We zoom like that. We out. We out. We out.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.